The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ring Rose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ring Rose. Ring Rose is going here. What a score.
Welcome along to the Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. I am joined in studio by Pat McCarry. Pat, how are you?
Good. Back fighting fit again, yep.
You had pneumonia.
Yeah. I said it to a few of my mates. I was out at the weekend. They said, oh, you sound like you have a bit of a cold. And I said, oh, I had pneumonia. And they said, isn't that what 70-year-old women get to me? They said.
And shingles.
Yeah. My bones hurt now. But yeah, you'll still hear it in my voice a little bit. I've got that kind of husky pneumonia thing going on in my voice.
You're not on a Brian Cowan, no?
No.
Right, grand. And James Downey.
Andy, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
Very well, sir.
We'll also be speaking to EPCR Director General Vincent Gaillard about Heineken's decision to sponsor the Champions Cup from next season. The gang are back together.
Has it ever left?
Well,
I still refer to it as the Heineken Cup. It's just one of those associations, isn't it?
We'll ask them about that. Yeah. In fairness, I mean, you know, why do you bother? Everyone's been doing it anyway, so. Yeah, and we'll have the lowdown from the Australian perspective for the series. A Sports 360 writer, Alex Brown, joins us to discuss the Australia team and what they want from the series and how they think Ireland will go. Before we start, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud and all good podcast app to get the show straight to your phone. Sorry, it's a bank holiday mistake there. That was a nice start to the weekend. Sevens, Jimmy.
Yeah,
time on the sofa, yeah.
I did, yeah. Had a quiet day yesterday. So glued to it. In fairness, for an invitational team, as they're saying, you know, they really produced the goods, didn't they? You know, getting to that semi final, okay, it was a bit of a stretch. You're playing against Fiji are just unbelievable. Like, it's ridiculous. It's men against boys. Even before they played Ireland, it was men against boys, but What an effort though, like to beat the States and the way they did it, and then to beat England, then to get third place in Twickenham. Always a nice little caveat to have there at the end. But look, it's just a bit kind of like you look at it and you kind of see all the club players that are playing there, and you kind of want it to be so much more full time, you know, and just the input that all the rest of the countries have, and we don't have it as much. It's a pity, and especially when you see what the players have achieved there. And look, it's brilliant for the game, isn't it? Like, and I think it has everyone's interest over the weekend, which is great to see.
Yeah, it did seem to grab people, all right. Mm. I mean, Sevens is a brilliant game, and it's a great thing to watch and get into. It can be used as a pathway correctly.
Mm. If you look at Ione for the All Blacks, say, you know, like he came through the Sevens system. Like, he was playing there consistently, and it's just a great base for skill sets, you know. It's like your catch and pass, and under pressure it's got to be huge, you know. So I think if Ireland can do something along those lines, even if you get one player, it's worth it.
Well, that's it. I mean, there's a huge amount of funding that actually comes centrally from World Rugby for this, and to get a team on the road like that, it's not huge money. But in the past, IRFU have made choices, and those choices did not involve Sevens for a long amount of time. I mean, they were saying, right, we're going to fund Connacht, for example, a bit more fully and not put money into Sevens. But they're there now. But as you say, they're an invitational side. So they're invited to London this weekend. They're invited to Paris for next weekend. But they lost the Hong Kong qualifier tournament this season. So it's concentrating that next season.
But you're also looking at players who are pretty much not contracted. You know, there's no contract of players that I know of. And look, you're kind of isolating the talent of players that are there. I've played with some lads that would be like, you are perfect for Sevens. Mm. Like, you'd have all the skill sets for Sevens. And it's just because they're in the system, in the 15 system, that it's unavailable to them to kind of go down that pathway. Well, if they were there, like, again, skill sets, small things are improved consistently. The money's not great in Sevens, I can understand that, but still, it's a different path. Like, and not everyone's built or made for 15s. Some people are Seven specialists. Like, as I say, the Fijians seem to just produce both, you know. And But look, I think it's a pathway we should look at.
Well, the Fijians don't have many 15 specialists. Put it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought it was funny there yesterday, just with the fact that lads were like lacing in tries from all over the place, and you could just see on Twitter people asking, "Who does he play? Do we own him? Is he Leinster? Yeah. Is he Connacht?" Like, and like Ballacoon, I think, is Ulster lad, and Conroy. Yeah. There was a big debate over
who owns him.
Yeah, yeah. Who does he play for? And it was kind of the next Robbie Henshaw or something.
Well, there's nothing like a bandwagon.
Yeah.
For Irish sports, especially when the sun's shining. You know, it's good. It's all feel good. But there is one aspect to sevens as a pathway, which is that you can't teach speed. And if you want to get players involved in rugby who have serious pace, then sevens is a great route for that. Because you can get them used to contact. I mean, you get proper athletes coming in. I know I saw Brian O'Driscoll has talked about this before. I've talked to someone on the IRFU backroom staff about this before. And they've asked the question, how can we get more guys with raw pace? As in, Dennis Hickey pace, game-changing pace.
Mm.
And we don't have many.
No, and like Pat mentioned him there, Jordan Conway, or Conroy, was like he's got out-and-out gas.
Wheels.
You know? But like you look at the American kind of version of it, and what they do, they get their ex-collegiates or American or NFL athletes who are specimens and just go, right, you've got wheels, you've got gas, all we got to do is kind of transfer a small bit of rucking, bit of passing, bit of catching, which you can work on easy, but like speed just kills it, like, you know. And you saw like even Dan Norton yesterday, just out and out pace, out and out gas. Carl Niles, like, speed kills, you know. It's like ridiculous. I used to hate it playing 15s, never mind playing 7s, and believe you me, I attempted 7s before, but
yeah, we talked about that before.
Yeah but it's like, you know, I'm not built for it, like, but but like the Americans have it kind of right, you know. They have athletes, as you say, like, and they have raw pace, and they might be suited to 15s, but if 7s is a pathway for them to kind of play for their country, and which is the be all, so why not?
Yeah, and as you say, the important point is, when you've got a core, if you have a core, and, you know, a contracted core ideally of 7s players, then you can filter people in and out, and it works well. We've seen a few players on the fringes of the provinces have a go in 7s over the last couple of years. And so this is good, and the more hype we can get, the better. Roll on 7 series event at the Aviva Stadium.
Yes,
someday.
Yes.
Be good. Big umbrella, maybe. Right, that's it for 7s. Looking forward to 15s now. Ireland have a series against Australia to play. And for an Australian perspective, we're joined on the line now by Australian journalist Alex Bruin.
Hello, nice to talk to you.
Thank you for joining us here on the Hard Yard. So, Australia looking ahead to 3 tests against Ireland ahead of the Rugby Championship. We're going to be talking about in a while what Ireland want to see from this tour, but what will Australia want to see from this tour? Because all is not completely cheery with rugby in Oz. Is that fair?
Well, yeah. I mean, Ireland have already done a great service for Australian rugby because they've got some interest in this series. They've sold out the Sydney Test already, and the sales are really good for Brisbane and Melbourne. So all the Irish based down in Australia are really getting behind their team and coming along to see the game. So, I mean, already Australia is very excited, and Rugby Australia is certainly very thankful for that. But in terms of what, you know, the Wallabies are wanting to get out of it, really it's just building towards the World Cup. Michael Checker's got a very inexperienced squad, and I think that, you know, Checker called them the Jolly Green Giant coming down to play us, and I think he's very aware of how good this Irish team is, but I don't think the Australian public is. And I'm not even sure if the players are aware. Israel Folau was asked a couple of days ago, what does he think about the Irish team? And he said, and I don't know if he was downplaying things. He said, oh, I don't know anything about them. I haven't watched any videos yet. So how he, you know, being the great player he is, could miss the extraordinary rise of Irish rugby is beyond me. And, you know, I'm full of nothing but admiration for the structures in Ireland, the national team, Joe Smith. I mean, what Leinster have done this year is extraordinary. And what Ireland did in the Six Nations was extraordinary, and all without players like Sean O'Brien. So, you know, I'm hats off to what you've achieved in Ireland, because it's absolutely extraordinary.
I've seen, Alex, some of the early maybe articles when Ireland arrived was talking about James Ryan and I think Georgina Robinson had something on him. But yeah, people are kind of aware of his kind of unbeaten run. But with James, is there any other of the young Irish players that are standing out already to you that might have an impact?
Well, I've watched a lot of Ireland this year, so James Ryan, phenomenal player. You know, if you needed it, but you've got another one. The back row is extraordinary. You know, the front row, those five props, those five Leinster props, and that's unfair that they all come from Leinster. It completely is. But then you go out wide to Jacob Stockdale, and what a player. You know, down in Australia, they're calling him the Irish Jonah Lomu, so he's an amazing player. And I'm a big, big fan of Bundiaki, and he may not even start. He may not even play. But, you know, when you've got two players like Connor Murray and Johnny Sexton there who are just going to control the game to the level that they will control it, and you've got such great players like Rob Kearney at the back, I mean, even the experience of Keith Earls, the great thing about the Irish side is it picks itself. Whereas this Australian team, I mean, I saw a tweet the other day saying, from somebody, you know, who's quite well connected with rugby, saying he looked at the Wallaby squad and he could only recognise 10 names. So, you know, some of the names, you know, people can't even pronounce, let alone know who they are. So it's a really, really unknown quantity for the Wallabies. And Michael Checker has a lot of decisions to make when he sits down to pick that team. Most of the starting 15 come from the Waratahs. The Waratahs have been in pretty poor form this year, to tell you the truth, in Super Rugby. The Rebels, a lot of the players come from there too, and that basically team is a team made up of combining the Force, who are now defunct, and the Rebels together. So they're a couple of guys who are just finding their feet. And he just keeps throwing Hail Mary passes. I mean, Tom Banks has been selected. Tom Banks, 8 months ago, was tiling bathrooms, and now he's in the Wallaby squad. So, you know, I think they've got a lot of decisions to make. And also, they only have to make those in 6 days. They finish playing Super Rugby on Sunday. They play Ireland on Saturday. So the questions he has to answer in a very, very short period of time make this incredibly difficult for the Wallabies. And I personally, I can't see anything but an Irish victory.
You were tiling bathrooms at the weekend, Jimmy, weren't you?
I don't know about that. But I actually saw Tom Banks playing last weekend. And look, I think it's... Cech has got an interesting way of doing things, doesn't he? Like, and I think he's gone on form. Players who are actually kind of showing some bit of form over there. But, are you playing it down a little bit that, like, you know, oh, look, we've selected these guys. Like, this guy was tiling. This guy was doing this. And, like, it seems to be kind of an... Well, I think so anyway, that this would be a way that Irish people might normally go about things, kind of play down the whole thing. Look, we were expecting nothing. This is a whole new squad. Like, surely there has to be some sort of confidence in there about where the Aussies are going.
Well, listen, I think the Wallabies are confident, and I'm not sure where that confidence comes from, but it's partly Checker's fault too, because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but he started the revitalisation a bit himself when he, you know, took Leinster to the European Cup a number of years ago. So, I mean, Checker more than anybody knows Ireland. And listen, in years past, it would be downplaying. We'd be saying to you, oh, that guy's all right and that guy's not much good, and we'd know 100% how good they actually are. And, you know, there are some good players. But Michael Hooper, the young captain, is not in great form. Adam Coleman is from the Rebels. He's a lock forward. He's a great player. And I think you'll really admire him during the term. Will Genny has been a bit injured, and as I say, Foley, Courtney Beale's been a bit up and down. The one player who's absolutely outstanding and is world class is Israel Folau, but Israel has issues around himself too, of course, because of, you know, these quite strong tweets he's been sending out about various issues. So there's a bit of a cloud over him as well. I personally really like Rhys Hodge as well, but he may not play Rhys Hodge. He may play Dane Haylett-Petty. I mean, there's some good players there, but whether they can gel in the time that they need to gel. And, you know, one player who's missing is an extraordinary young flanker we've got called Jack Dempsey, and he made a massive difference when he beat the All Blacks last year. But he's out injured. He's been out injured for a long time, Jack, so I think they're really going to miss him. And the big problem is at hooker. Stephen Moore, who's, you know, comes from an Irish background, of course. Stephen's retired. They didn't decide to bring Tatafu Polaitanau back from England, which really surprised me. And that the third choice, Jordan Ulisi, got injured on the weekend playing for the Rebels. So, you know, they're bringing in a fourth-choice hooker, Brendan Painga from the Reds, and the fifth-choice hooker, I've got to know, I don't even know who it is, to tell you the truth. So, I mean, they're really, you know, the Checkers expecting these guys to really step up, but Ireland are so organised and so disciplined, they're not going to give Australia the ball. They're just going to keep pounding away at that line till Australia misses tackles. And, you know, unless Ireland have a very, very off day and do what Brian O'Driscoll did on the Lions tour many years ago and head down to the pub at Manly the day before the game, I can't see them slipping up here.
Yeah, so the series odds for perspective here are, so it's the bookies have it 6-2-4 for an Ireland 2-1 series win. 17-10 on Australia, 2-1 win. 9-2 Ireland, 3-0, and 5-1 Australia, 3-0. So 22-1 any other result, which basically means 22-1 against a draw in any game, right? But for context, like Ireland haven't won in Australia for ages. The 2011 World Cup, beating Australia, wasn't in Australia. So it was a neutral venue, and I think we forget that sometimes. So getting a win down there, we're taking that as a given. Getting the series win would still be pretty good, lads.
Is that it? The late 70s? Is that when we won the series? Is that the last time we won down there?
Yeah, we were all born, I think.
it is a long time ago, and I think the one thing in Ireland's favour here is, of course, they went down to South Africa last year. They won that first test, and then they let that series slip away. And I think Joe Schmidt and the whole squad are going to be absolutely desperate to make sure the opportunity doesn't slip away this time. Also, a lot of the boys, of course, were on the Lions tour. Same thing on the Lions tour. They got, you know, they drew that series. So I think they'll be absolutely determined. So I think Ireland will win the first one because Australia just haven't had any preparation at all. The Wallabies might be slightly better in the second, but, you know, I think, and, you know, maybe Ireland might lose the third because the boys might, you know, clock off a bit for that third test. But, you know, I think the fact that they haven't won for so long down here and the fact that they messed that series against South Africa 2 years ago, I think they're going to be absolutely determined. I think one thing you might be surprised is our scrum will probably be okay. I think Ireland will dominate the scrum, but I think we'll hold up pretty well there. But the problem with the back line is just not firing like it should. So even if we get opportunities, we're not going to be able to use them as an Australian team may have used them, you know, a few years ago.
We still see some big scorelines in Super Rugby and a couple more just this weekend gone. I saw an interesting comment from Donal Lennon, who I know you've history with, Alex. We'll come back to that, right?
Donal and I get on very well together these days.
Oh, no, I know. We'll definitely have a chat with that. I'll come back to it in a second and I'll explain exactly to the listeners what I'm talking about. But he said, to be honest with you, a lot of people don't place huge stock in what's happening in Super Rugby anymore. He's talking about Northern Hemisphere people. There was a time when we'd all look in awe at the quality of the rugby, but now there's a feeling that it doesn't prepare people for test rugby. It's a different type of game. I thought that was an interesting comment.
It's an interesting comment. I'm not sure it's completely accurate because you've got to look at it as two separate groups. You've got to look at it as the New Zealand teams, and then you've got to look at it as everybody else. And the New Zealand teams are playing a standard of rugby that is just years away from anybody, really. The Crusaders, the Hurricanes, the Highlanders, the Chiefs. I mean, not the Blues, they're not performing so well, but those four teams, you take them anywhere in the world and they will beat anybody. And they will mainly, they beat a lot of international teams too. They are absolutely extraordinary. They can play a tough game when they need to. They can play an expansive game when they need to. They can do anything. But then you look at the other teams, the Australian teams have not been good at all. They've been very poor. The Waratahs have had moments. The Rebels have been, you know, improving. The Reds are a very young squad. Brumbies have been up and down. And also South Africa is not very, very strong. I mean, the Argentinians are actually doing very well in the South African Conference. But I think when you're looking at New Zealand teams and you look at a game like the Crusaders versus the Hurricanes, the Chiefs versus the Crusaders on the weekend, also the Highlanders versus the Hurricanes, when you watch one of those games, the standard of rugby, the toughness of the rugby, the skill, the execution, the precision is absolutely world class. So, you know, I agree with Donald in terms of the rest of Super Rugby, but those New Zealand teams are absolutely outstanding. I still think they set the benchmark for world rugby, those Super Rugby teams from New Zealand. And I also think they do play the best rugby in the world. And that's taking into consideration everybody.
Yeah, that's well said. So here's what we were talking about, because we were having a chat before we came on air. So you were a former press officer, correct?
Yes, I was.
Yes, you were. And now, Pat, tell us about the Battle of Pretoria, and then we'll ask Alex about it.
Yeah, I remember speaking to Alex about this before. It was the 1998 tour, and Ireland heading down under Don Lenihan and Gatlin, I think. And went down to play South Africa and basically just put up a fight. And they put up a fight and they still got absolutely battered. And there's a funny quote from Alex before. He just said he'd went into the dressing room afterwards, and it was just like, he just said, I think, my God, the Irish were battered and bruised. They're bleeding from all over the place. They tried to give as good as they got, but South Africa boys were a lot bigger and a lot stronger. And that was on the pitch. And then after the pitch, Alex and Donal Lenihan got into it as well.
Yeah, listen, it's Donal and I have a very interesting history. I was very surprised 2.5 years later when Donal rang me and said, well, I'd like to be the media officer for the Lions tour. So obviously I didn't make an impression, but Donal, listen, that was anybody, if you haven't, get on YouTube and watch that, the Battle of Pretoria. It was one of the filthiest games in the history of rugby. It was appalling. And both teams were, I'm not sure whether they picked it off because they were frustrated with the way the tour was going, but then the box certainly picked it up. And it was just, I mean, the ball was like 30 yards away and guys would be bashing each other. It was an appalling game of rugby. It was the most violent thing I've ever seen. And of course, I was working with the Springboks then, so I was probably closer attached to them. But I remember going into the Irish dressing room because I had to get them to come to the press conference, and looking around that room, I mean, every Irish player was dazed, was bruised, was bleeding. And Donal looked at me and said, what the F are you doing here? Get the F out, seeing me there standing in my Springbok blazer, which I can understand. And I said, oh, I'm sorry, Donnie, but I've got to come to the press conference. But, it was just such an odd game of rugby. And there was some great Irish, I mean, Keith Wood was in that game. There were some legendary Irish players in that team. But it's just, I don't know, I think the Irish boys tried to turn it on to unsettle the Springboks. And, these guys are huge. Mark Andrew, Crane Otto, Oz Durant. I mean, you don't take those guys on in that kind of contest because you're always going to lose. Joos van der Vesta, and the great man himself, there was they were Francois Pinault, they were big boys, and this was also the 1998 Springboks, who won 17 matches in a row. So it was I'll never forget the Battle of Pretoria. And as I say, look it up online, because it certainly was, you won't believe some of the things that went down in that game. And if it was played now, I reckon about 5 players from each side would have been red carded.
The good old days. Yeah. Right, Alex. Alex Bruhn, thank you very much for joining us in the Hard Yards.
Thanks so much, and looking forward to a great series. But as I say, I think Irish eyes will be smiling at the end of this one.
Hey, we'll take that.
Alex was not really looking forward to this series.
No, he was. He seemed to be downplaying it a bit.
You think? There's a
lot
of
You know what Cech is like, I think, especially from an Irish perspective, that he knows exactly what's going on. But I just think that it's all very much, we're playing towards this, we're looking at the future. I wouldn't believe as much of the downplaying as they say. And even the Israel Folau deflection of, I'm not really sure about, I haven't seen Ireland play videos, like, he's an international player, they're playing them next week. Surely he's seen videos.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask that. If you're week to week, in fairness, if we just called random Irish squad player into the room and gave them truth serum, there might be some that actually haven't watched tape of Australia in a while, but they wouldn't give that answer.
I think we have such a fascination with Super Rugby and how exciting it is and how open it is, and we'd always have an interest. And there are a lot of Southern Hemisphere players that don't even acknowledge the Northern Hemisphere or acknowledge the Six Nations, or,
well, until the contract offer comes.
Correct, exactly. No, but money talks. But Folau seems to be, as Alex said, like, he's very controversial in what he says, but that's just a bit. Like, that's kind of, that writes itself. Now the team talk writes itself. You kind of go in and go, these lads don't rate you. how we're not rated is beyond me when you're Grand Slam champions, number two in the world. Like, you can't have your head in the sand, you know, and especially where Australia have dropped off a lot in the last couple of years. But look, it's encouraging again to see that he's expect. I expect probably a 2-1, maybe 3-0, 2-1. And I agree that they might slip off towards the end, depending on what changes he's going to make. Because I do think that it is a long-term game. Yes, it'd be great to win the series, but it's all building towards World Cup.
Well, that's the key point. So it's about changes. So if Joe Schmidt rolled out his first choice 15, Rory Best is now not on tour, but first choice 15 from the players on tour, yeah, you could be looking at a 3-0.
Yeah.
But that's not really what Irish rugby needs. So this is something we need to talk about now. So Best is out, Scannell's now on tour. The captaincy decision is interesting because there doesn't seem to be a decision yet, Pat.
Yeah, Schmidt was, before they left here, had a little press conference at Carlton House, and he said, just dropped in the, because all the talk was about Joey Carberry, but in the middle of it he just said, oh, and Rory Best is out of the tour. The captain of Ireland is out of the tour. And he was asked about who's going to step up, and yeah, it was just kind of saying, well, we've got Peter O'Mahony there and we've got Johnny Sexton. We might leave it between the two of them, but we haven't decided yet. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see who gets named at the weekend. But what I'm sure they'll stress that the two lads are going to make a lot of decisions, but one of them's going to get the nod to Captain Ireland at the weekend.
Well, it sounds like when you consider the changes that they're going to make on this tour and people get game time, that it might actually make a lot of sense to not have a captain who definitely won't play in one game. Because I don't think we should be surprised Jonathan Sexton is completely out of one of the games.
Oh, I'd expect that.
Yeah.
You know,
there's no point naming him captain
exactly,
if he's not
going to play. Yeah. If Pete and Johnny are on the pitch at the same time, fair enough, but obviously they're not going to be playing all three tests, and you wouldn't expect them to play it because we need that strength and depth. We need that game time for certain players. Like, for me, it's not a bad thing that Rory Best is out. I think we've like he's old enough now, like he's been there, done that, but the guys below just need a little bit more game time just to get confidence up. If you can go down to Australia, get a test win, confidence is going to be flying. So you will have, come World Cup time, you can throw players in who have been there, done that, as opposed to, oh no, Rory's injured, what are we going to do? Oh, this guy hasn't played much. We need to get game time for just that level below. I still think we're extremely well equipped to deal with the Aussies down there, regardless of missing a couple of players. Even if Johnny didn't play any tests, I think it's not a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see what they go. I think they'd probably go Cronin. But it'd be interesting to see what he considers Cronin to be as a player. Is he this impact player? So it wouldn't surprise me for at least one of the games to see Niall Scannell just go straight from being out of the squad to starting a test, because I'm not 100% sure whether Rob Herring, you know, like is going to be the answer if Best isn't there. So I'd see Cronin maybe starting that first test because him and the Leinster lads, you know, as Alex kind of mentioned, the five Leinster guys, John Ryan is that fifth guy, the Munster lad, but yeah, you have the four Leinster props, so it's so easy for Sean Cronin to slot in there, and he's finished the season so well.
So we'll talk about the Munster signing side of the Joey Carberry thing later, but in terms of this tour, John Cooney, Ross Byrne, Joey Carberry, these are the people we need to see have game time.
Yeah, and I think that I know before we spoke and I said that I didn't think Johnny would go, but Johnny, being the competitor that he is, obviously wants to go down there and keep playing and keep himself ticking over. But I do think it's kind of, we're going to be smart, I'm going to look after Johnny, and if we start him, we'll take him off early enough. And there's no point in bringing Joey down and giving him 20 minutes. Like, he needs to play from the start. Like, it's a different game when you're like an international game is different, but starting a game of 10 is completely different, and away from home, which ultimately is, again, looking long term World Cup, we're talking about, like, we can win at home, which is fine, but we need to learn to kind of, which we have done, win away and be consistent at winning away. Like, and this is a great test for us that we're down in Australia, three games, and he needs to kind of, not just him, but the rest of the players, just have that extra bit of confidence that, look, we're going to go to Japan and we need to win away from home. It's great winning at home, which is fine, but we need to do it away.
Yep, it's also a tour environment. So this is different from last summer, because there were essentially two tours. There was the Lions guys on tour, and there was the rest of Ireland on a tour to other places. Now we're all together, and this is the last time they will do that as a group before the World Cup. And that's really important as well.
And it's 3 weeks in a row. Yeah. Like, it's not as if it's, oh, like, no disrespect, but like a USA or a Canada or something like that. It's Australia 3 weeks in a row. It's the environment where people get bumps and bruises. Yep. People drop in and out. It's not just a one-off test where it's not. It's like the attritional aspect of...
It shit happens. You have to deal with it because the game next week is not going away.
And this is where, like, looking back to the last World Cup, this is where we suffered. When, like, we focused, I think, so much in the Australia game that, like, you know, we won that one and then it was like we were gone then after that, you know, because it was just that main focus. Now it's like, right, we need to be, we're better than that now. We're in a better position. We need to have different players who can step up.
It would be great to see Carberry and Murray have one test over there together, like, just to kind of give you, because Carberry hasn't really had that yet with Ireland to be beside Murray. So great to see that. I can only see, maybe Ross Byrne, like, I can't see him starting a game, like maybe a couple of bench appearances or something like that. But yeah, excited to kind of see. I'd love to see Cooney. Like, I'm a big fan of Marmy, and he's done so well for Ireland, and Schmidt seems to trust him. But love to see Cooney get at least one start, maybe not the first test, get off to a winning start if we can, but love to see Cooney in there for a good run.
Yeah, and a start is important.
Yeah,
he's a start in nine.
That's
really important. We'll do a lot more talking about this tour over the next few weeks, but we'll end that there and we'll be back with a chat with EPCR Director General Vincent Gaillard.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing really. Remember Raj Kev in the Killiney, he used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
Welcome back to the Hard Yards. Well, in news this week, it seems that the Heineken Cup is now back, or at least in a form. Where once there was the Heineken Cup, then it changed to the Champions Cup. It is now back as the Heineken Champions Cup. And I have on the line Vincent Gaillard from EPCR and Hans-Erik Kuyt from Heineken. Hello. Thank you very much for joining the Hard Yards. Firstly, to Vincent from EPCR. This is an interesting move. The Heineken association with the old tournament was certainly a more successful sponsorship arrangement. That then went away. I'm really interested into the background for you guys bringing them back on board.
Right. An interesting move, perhaps. It's a very, very exciting one for us, undoubtedly. Listen, it's a... It simply is a, as we see it, a very natural evolution of the model that was established 4 years ago, right? We have been having discussions for a while now with Heineken, who had expressed a interest in reassociating at the highest level with our flagship competition. And when you have a brand of such caliber talking to you about an increased association, you're duty-bound to consider it. And that's what we did. When I mentioned a natural evolution, the model itself will remain a multi-partner model. It will just have a fantastic premium international brand on sitting on top of it, as we see it. And what we will benefit from, of course, one, the history and the relationship that we've established over the years, because Heineken has never gone away from the partnership. They've been with us for a long time now. But also, really, the impact and the of a high caliber reputable brand sitting along the Champions Cup, which is hugely exciting for us.
Okay, that definitely makes sense. And in fairness, as you said, the association has always been there. We've certainly seen Heineken on the goalpost, things like that, for the last couple of years. Hans-Erik, from the Heineken point of view, I hope you take this question constructively, but since a lot of people were probably calling it the Heineken Cup anyway, what was the benefit for you guys in making that association formal again?
Well, we are, at the end of the day, we are the founding partner of the Heineken Cup back in the 90s. We have a huge association with rugby, and we think that our name belongs back to the to this competition. The competition is strong. Heineken is a premium brand and an important market in Ireland, France, and in the UK. But we see that television and interest in the Heineken Champions Cup is beyond this market as well. Heineken is the only truly global brand, and that's why it makes a lot of sense to put your name back into the title.
How does it work in France? I know in the old tournament it used to be called the H Cup. Will that remain? Will it be called the H Champions Cup?
Well, that's a good point. It's all quite new and fresh, so we need to sit down together with our colleagues and find the right naming, what is legally possible for the tournament in France.
Vincent, certainly getting them back on board, as you say, it's good. I think the historical nature of Heineken, it's worked, and some of this point to all the time. How does this work with your other sponsors? I know, for example, Turkish Airlines have been a major partner over the last couple of years. How does this affect those relationships?
Yeah. Well, we're having those discussions with them as we speak. Both Turkish Airlines, but also with Tissot. Tissot, basically, we know already we'll stay on, and we have a long-term contract with them anyway, but the reaction was very, very positive, and really for the reasons that I mentioned before. They'll see that the competition will benefit from an increased exposure and reputational benefit of reassociating with a big brand. Turkish Airlines, we'll see. We're at the end of our partnership, of the first cycle of our partnership. So we're in discussion about their continued involvement, but that still remains to be decided as of today. Back to the previous point about, so we're having really no concern about what the effect that this will have for our current partners. In fact, we're quite the contrary. We'll think that having Heineken at the highest level will allow us to bring more partners on board. It is still a multi-partner model. We're keeping the Champions Cup, the brand that we've been pushing for the last 4 years, very much alive. We're just reassociating with a hugely exciting brand next to it.
Speaking more broadly about the tournament, a couple of years back we had no Pro 12 as it was participation in what I'll call the pointy end of the tournament. This was obviously seen as a potentially troublesome, but the Pro 14 have come back with a bit of a roar this season. Have there been discussions with an EPCR about the potential for South African sides joining the tournament?
Did you say South African sides?
Yes, potentially.
I didn't hear you go well. Yeah. No, there has not been any serious official discussions. Of course, we've all reacted obviously to the news that they were unfolding. First of all, the two clubs joined last season. The potential for more clubs from South Africa or elsewhere, but no serious discussions have taken place. I think suffice to say, perhaps that for it to happen would require a unanimous agreement by all of our stakeholders, and that is the six unions and three leagues. So we're really not there yet. It's not on the agenda as we speak. Might it happen in the future? Yeah, it's theoretically possible, but it will take time before it happens for certain.
Hmm. How do you think Bilbao went this year?
Listen, after the few concerns that kept us very much, you know, worried for the weeks prior to the tournament, linked to accommodation and pricing, which we, of course, weren't very happy with. For the rest, it will stay as a massive, massive success. One, in terms of what it provided to our core fans, right? Those that traveled and those that wanted or were keen to get new experiences, right, in new places. But also in terms of our ability to reach to new fans, in this case in Spain. So for us, a massive success all around.
In terms of Bilbao, and I know next year Newcastle is going to be the destination for the final, and there's talk of maybe even, I think, maybe a battle between White Hart Lane and the Stade Vélodrome in Marseille for 2020. But how do you guys then ensure in the future that you can keep hotel prices down? Is that something you have to talk with the city about? You know, how do you kind of keep the flights and the hotel prices down for these finals?
Yeah, I think at the very minimum is to will be to go to cities that we are comfortable to start with, have a sort of a higher capacity, if you will, than what Bilbao had. And then, yes, it's doing more work upfront with the various host cities to try and block as much as possible, which is absolutely not straightforward because it's a free market and it's very hard even for a host city or for to actually control the prices of their, you know, private sector hotels. But where we will certainly pay increased attention to it. But I think, again, it will start by selecting cities that have a higher capacity to start with. And the examples that you've just mentioned have exactly that, right?
Is Amsterdam a good example, given the new Heineken Association?
It certainly is a good example of a city that has an increased accommodation capacity, yes.
Okay, thanks very much for your time this morning. One last thing, just while you're on, Van Sant. The case of Heidelberger RK and Stade Francais, there's been a bit of discussion about this, and I'm going to give a very brief bit of background to the listeners. So in the Challenge Cup, there are only 19 of 20 teams named for next season's competition. And the German side, Heidelberger RK, have been told that they cannot compete because one of their primary owners, for want of a better term, is Hans-Peter Wildt, who is also the owner of Stade Francais. And the principle is that you can't have one party owning two teams in the same competition. So the question I'm asking is simply, one other thing that I have seen brought up, and it came up when, for example, Mohamed Altrad was in discussions to buy Gloucester, was what is the difference between a private individual having an interest in two teams in the same competition and a body like the IRFU, the Irish Rugby Football Union, owning the provinces? Can you just clarify that for us?
Yeah. I think it's actually quite straightforward. We believe that the governing bodies, the unions, have the long-term health of the game as a key objective, right? That's what they're here for, and that's what they're here to protect. The situation with a private sector individual is very different in terms of ultimate aims, right? So we've taken that position early on, in the previous Altrad Gloucester case. We see the situation of the SRU or the RFU or WR is very, very, very different because their interest is to maintain the health of the game, the integrity of the game in their countries, right? That is the biggest difference as we see it. And that's why we've taken that position.
Okay, that's, I think, fairly clear. Do you know, or are you able to tell us when the 20th team will be unveiled?
It's a question of days. We will be announcing it probably, before the 10th of June. We have to be ready for the pool draw that will take place on the 20th of June, right? So we will have that 20th team confirmed way beforehand.
Excellent. Thank you very much to Vincent Gaillard from EPCR and Hans-Erik Kaut from Heineken, who are here to tell us on the Hard Yards about Heineken's new involvement, renewed involvement as a title sponsor with the Champions Cup.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
Welcome back to the Hard Yards. We're going to take a look at some of your social media questions now. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at @THYRugby and use the hashtag #AskTHY if you want to get a question in for the panel for next week. Lots in about Joey Carberry. So yep. This is now the mini Carberry segment, right?
Yeah.
So this tour aside, looking ahead to the World Cup, Joey Carberry has moved to Munster. It is now official. Pat, seemed to take people a little suddenly when it actually happened.
Yeah,
is that fair?
Yeah. Because the last we hadn't spoken to Carberry at all since it all came out, and going on for 6 weeks, and Johnny Sexton came out and spoken to us about it after they won the Pro 14 and said if he goes he'll be missed but we hope he stays, and that's where he's kind of left. And then things seemed to move very quickly. I think he met Van Graan then, well, went partying, they had a kind of crazy shirt day I think on the Sunday, spilled over into the Monday. And then he sobered up and headed down to Munster and met Johan van Graan and must have got assurances about you're going to get a go at this 10 jersey, you know, and you'll... And another big one was like you and Conor Murray are going to play together. So it was very kind of in the... A lot of the Munster players, you know, weren't sure of it themselves. So I'd heard they'd been getting in touch with van Graan and getting in touch with the coaching staff asking, is this happening? And they were kept in the dark about it. And then it came out that I think he was speaking to Michael Corcoran on RT Radio, and that's where it came out on. Just after the training session, he broke the news. You start seeing all these tweets, you know, without any big press release, nothing pre-prepared. Just Carberry has moved. So everybody was scrambling. So I think he took people by surprise. And some people took Joe Schmidt's comments in that press conference that followed. He said, this is new news to me. And he was kind of pretending like he was shocked by it. But
I think the context is important.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Joe Schmidt wasn't hiding under a rock.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't think that people expected it to come out in that way. The IRFU is normally really controlling about messaging and things like that. Mm-hmm. And this was not the usual sequence you'd see, Pat.
Yeah, yeah. It was just, as you said, everything would have been prepared. You would have had statements. You would have had Leinster. I think Leinster were late in the day getting a statement out. There would have been Instagram posts. There would have been nice tribute videos and stuff. So it took him a bit by surprise. So maybe that was Carberry taking ownership of it himself. He could, again, get a rap on the knuckles for why did you break it yourself? But I was kind of saying, like, the kind of did a piece about it at the weekend that we were talking about before. And being over at the Stan Mams Stadium in Bilbao, and all the Leinster guys were celebrating. And I remember it in the mix zone, and it was a kind of, you know, in these weird moments where you're actually shaking hands with the players at the end, saying congratulations, they've got the medals around their neck. It was a kind of, it was almost like you dropped the front between each other. You're happy for them, they're delighted as well. And so it was a kind of nice moment chatting to some of the guys like Rhys Ruddock and Luke McGrath at the end. And then, you know, unfortunately, Carberry was the one player who just wasn't given, he wasn't allowed, or he didn't want to, but he wasn't allowed to give press intervius. And I remember him just being ushered by us all and staring straight ahead. Yeah,
I read your piece. I thought it was really interesting perspective, because you're standing there and you were saying essentially, look, on this day, which is just, everyone's just happy.
Mm.
You know, as you said, there's a little bit of a drop on the front because everyone's kind of happy.
Yeah.
And there was still this focus on, Joey's going nowhere near those ways.
Yeah.
You know?
Because you could understand why they did it, because, like, as much as you think, the question, someone's going to ask the question, like, you can't have 10 journalists standing in front of Carberry and not mention Munster or Ulster.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of the job.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, it was a shame that, you know, like, everybody's chatting away and there's him still worried about getting asked the question, you know, like, so.
But it's a deflection away from what's happened. Like,
yeah.
Do you know, like, I can completely understand it from, like, the press officer's point of view in terms of, why would you do that? Because it's not about Joey. This is not Joey's time or Joey's day or whatever. This is us celebrating an unbelievable achievement that they did. Yeah, regardless, to have a little, let them enjoy the moment a little bit, you know, as opposed to, right, what are you doing? And it's like, look, for me, personally, I think it's like, Joe Schmidt kind of came out with that, and I was like, nothing happens without Joe Schmidt knowing.
Yeah.
He's got complete control. Him and Nusafora, they knew extremely well. I think when you saw the speculation about Ulster and there was hesitation, not a chance he was going anywhere near there. If he did, it was completely forced. He didn't want to go there. I think he's just kind of, he has said it's a rugby decision. I completely agree it is a rugby decision. I think it's the right decision.
The Conor Murray aspect that Pat mentioned
is an interest. It's a great sideline. Yes. Like, it's a great sideline. I think it's okay. Like, Ulster's just not. I think for Joey is like an environment, a right environment. Ulster's not the right environment for him. I think he hesitated too long about that. So he obviously had no interest. So to get buy-in from the rest of the Ulster players, never mind anyone else.
Oh, the fans.
Yeah. Exactly.
If you see a player stalling for that long.
Exactly.
They don't want to go.
He was better, exactly. He was better off staying where he was. But he's been smart and he's kind of gone, it's not as if, like, he's played once at 10 for Leinster this year.
Yeah. Mm.
It's not as if he's number two. He's like, Johnny's gone, I'm in 10. Ross Byrne is deservedly there. He's got to play. Like, he has to play. And this is a great, as we say, a great sideline that he's going to be with Murray. But he still has to establish himself. There's what? They've got 5 tens there now, including themselves. So we got JJ, Keats,
Bill Johnson,
Tyler. Yeah, and Bill. Yeah. So, like,
that's a lot of tens.
It is. And look, they're not all going to be delighted to see Joey coming down.
But the signal is good. So the IRFU will be delighted with this move. And a friend of the podcast, Paul Williams, wrote on Twitter that Test rugby remains the pinnacle. Mm-hmm. That's why Joey Carberry moved. And that's what the IRFU will love, in my opinion, about this, that it sends a signal that, lads, if you want to play in the Test shirt, you need to do what is necessary.
Mm.
You know? And, like, Leinster won't be happy. They're getting penalised for success.
Well, yeah, but that's, and penalised for maybe
for developing too many players.
Well, like, you kind of got to look at your like look at their own provinces and kind of go, well, we're not developing players, and they seem to have this conveyor belt of players coming out. But like, for him to go, like, there's an opportunity now for say a Frawley or someone to step up and have a go. And
I will say, Connacht fans are probably screaming about Henshaw moving to Leinster and saying, lads, you know, turnabout is fair play.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, 100%. But like, it's going to happen more and more. Like, it's a business now. It's not just, you have your loyalties, you have your allegiances to your home province, but ultimately it is a business and you have to be able to play. I think the RFU model is extremely interesting and it works, that they have such control over the players that, like, but look at the results on the field. It's all about on field. And no matter how much it annoys you or pisses you off, it's showing. Like, you know, it's like, ultimately, as you say, it's all about the national side.
Yep.
Regardless, it's not as if we're privately owned, we're a fringe club who just pump in money, and it's not. It's all about the national game, and it's proven to work.
I find it interesting, people going on about somehow that Carberry's going to be stilted down at Munster. Like, Munster, sometimes it's a bit of a stereotype that, like, they just kick the ball high and just, you know, bash teams around with the pack. Like, I know they have done that in the past, but Carberry is good enough. You know, you've seen him at his best. You saw it even that little cameo. You saw it against Fiji last year, that he's good enough that Van Graan will back him, and, you know, they won't veer too far away from this kind of game plan. They often do this kicking game, and I guess because Conor Murray is so good at it, they're playing to his strengths. So if Carberry comes in and gets a chance, they'll play to his strengths as well. Like, and, you know, they've had Simon Zebo in the back line for a while, you know, like they can accommodate him.
They have an exciting back line.
They do.
You,
yeah.
Like, you know, when everyone's fit and available, that it's like, okay, if we have this extra kind of X factor that can unleash that, like, and as a defence, you're kind of being more worried about a 10 who's going to attack the line more and kind of be more of a threat, then it's going to create space for other people outside.
If you have a back line with Murray, Carberry, back three of, say, Conway, Earls, Sweetnam, stick Scannell, Farrell into the centre, there's a lot to like about that.
Yeah.
There's a lot to like about it. And the structure that Murray will provide Carberry to just go and play, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I can't wait for the game, the first Leinster-Munster game next season as well, and if Carberry's lining up against them. And I don't know, Jimmy, if you ever come across former players, like, or a lad that maybe didn't make it somewhere and had to move on somewhere else, you know.
Arlan, I'm going to layer this up, right? So, at one point, how many ex-Leinster players did you have in the Munster backline at one point?
I remember one training session. We had Keats, myself, Dennis Hurley, Johnny Murphy, Felix Jones, and Conway. 6 out of 7.
There you go.
Yeah.
The Leinster.
But people say that, but when you're in that environment, you buy into it completely. Like, you look at what Felix Jones has done. He's a fella who's gone down there and just bought into everything. Like, he's nearly Mr. Munster, you know. You nearly kind of go to the extreme of people aren't expecting, you know, you to kind of be involved as much as you are, like, but you just got to get in there, get down with it, and forget about it. Like, it's like, as I say, it's kind of a business, but like, you got to get immersed in the whole culture, and that's why Joey has to get down there and have the right attitude. Like, you saw Madigan beforehand, he was touted with Munster, and it's just like, no, like, it's not gonna, like, it's, he didn't want to go
didn't
down there.
He so could he, do it, yeah.
Like, he was like, oh no, I can't do it. But Joey's of a different mindset, and that's good. And he's got to go down there and, like, forget it. No one cares. Like,
in fairness, there are different stages in their careers as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
Madigan's looking for, you know, as you say, it's a business. He was going to get perhaps one more big contract, maybe two, and that's what has happened. Joey has time to invest, whereas maybe Mads didn't have that time.
Yeah, but I think it's a similar-ish situation that Mads needed to play. He needed to start as a 10, and he wasn't. And he made the decision to go to Begle Bordeaux. And look, he's kind of fallen off the radar now a bit, hasn't he? But that creates an opportunity for someone else. Like, you know, that creates a Ross Byrne, that creates a Joey Carby, because someone else moves on. Otherwise, you're going to get stagnant. And look, competition's only good. And look, as we say, ultimately, it's all about national side. No matter how annoying it is, and I can see the frustrations completely from the Leinster supporters that it's like, oh, we're losing this. But ultimately, you got to look at, like, we're losing this talent.
No one will be sorry for Leinster.
Exactly. Like, no, you know, it's not
nor
as if,
should
oh,
they be.
No.
You were saying, Andy, that you would like to know if, whether it's a loan deal. You know, like...
Yeah.
But there's it hasn't been released, but I'm presuming he signed as a...
I would. My assumption is it's a contract.
The initial two-year contract is what I gather, right? Ulster was a loan. Like...
That was a non-runner,
like, you know, to be honest. I think it was just kind of thrown out there and it was up to Joey to kind of make that decision. But it's, for me, if you're committing, you're committing. You got to go down there. You can't go, on loan with a view to going back.
So if you were advising Carberry, you'd be saying, move down. Don't be doing a commute and stuff. Get down there, get a house in Limerick or get a house in Cork, whatever.
But I don't think I would even have to say it to Joey. I think he's an ambitious guy. I was very impressed. It's kind of... how he kind of came out with things as well, that he wasn't done via all the proper channels and such. He was like, ultimately, I got to play. Like, I'm an ambitious guy. I back my ability to play 10. I want to play 10. I need to play 10. I'm not going to play here. I understand that. Takes a big man to actually kind of hold up the hand and go, right, I'm not going to play here. But for the greater good, I got to go. Like, and loan deal's not going to fly. Like, you got to go down there, commit. Can't go down for 12 months. You got to get in there, get stuck in.
All right. We're running along. We have time for, I think, one question today. This is from Brendan Kelly. Who would be on an Ireland sevens team? He said a fancy sevens team, but a sevens team, if we could choose from all our top players. So this is why, you know, Fiji, they're bringing in Tuisova, other top players from the 15s game. Who would we pick from the Ireland contracted game?
Because you're just going to have pace, aren't you? Like, so the obvious one to me would be Jordan Larmour, like, just because he can beat you so easily and he's got that acceleration. I know he's only up against a Scarlet's forward there, but you could see him outpaced him and he outpaced Halfpenny and had time to take the piss and flick the ball up as well. So he'd be perfect for the sevens game. I'd probably have one player. Well, Keith Earls, I think, as well. He'd be pretty good.
I do think, okay, if you're picking Larmour, you have to have I think you need a couple of forwards in there. You need a couple of back rowers. 100%, because if you had seven Jordan Larmours, you're not going to win too many rooks, are you?
Can I pick Robbie Henshaw as a forward in seventh?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Oh. Play prop.
How's that? That's a good move, isn't it?
Or a Jordy Murphy who has the skill set to kind of get around the park quick and break down, but also like astutely aware of what's going on around him, you know, that has that wherewithal of the connection with the backs and an open game.
But the thing is, now we're talking about fantasy because these players haven't grown up playing sevens. So hopefully we're sitting here in 10 years' time and there's another generation who've come through playing a bit of sevens.
Yeah.
And maybe they do get pulled out into their World Series.
As you said, bring it to Dublin, have a big 2-day party, and like they do in Wellington, you know, in New Zealand, and just you'll all of a sudden find the interest of a shoot up as well, like, because all of a sudden you're playing in front of sold out stadiums as well, like, so it's an extra incentive. So something like that, and then anyone who doesn't work out for them, we could go back to that Twitter question about American football and send them over to America. Yeah,
what did we start? NFL players converting to rugby. They take over the world. That was the starting point, wasn't it?
Yeah, just check out the at Andy McGeady, isn't it, on Twitter, and you'll just see a stream of suggestions.
Yeah, I have my clinching argument is this. Do you know how much game time there is, actual game time, in an NFL game?
16 seconds?
No.
It's 11 minutes.
I was going to say no.
Right? They're splitting it to offense and defense. So even rolling subs out of the question, that's 5.5 minutes. You're not telling me that converts automatically to rugby easily, and even takes skills out of the question.
So they walk around. Look, you look like, but you even look at the longevity of an NFL career. It's what, 3 years max? Like, it's just, look, you get paid a hell of a lot of money. But I'd take it.
Yeah, we leave that one to the Twitter rooms. Right, that's it for this week. Make sure to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to get a question in for the panel for next week. Thanks to James, Pat, Alex and Vincent Alnachan for producing, and it is Alan's last day here, so thank you very much for everyone. He's got a little bit of a promotion in Joe Towers, it seems.
Thanks, Al.
Thank you. And
nothing from James there.
No.
He's had too many compliments from me.
And Paul Donegan and Fiona Delaney were on production. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. And Tryon Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
And Ringrose comes through. Oh, that is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.